listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, my name is Mariana Sanchez Moreira. I'm Thought Leadership Director at Chemical Market Analytics by Opus. And with me today is Joe McKay, President and CEO at Auto Forecast Solutions. Thanks for joining me today, Joe.
Thank you, Mariana.
So just to give our listeners a bit of context, today our conversation will be focusing on automotive sector trends. We know vehicle fleet electrification is gaining momentum, but many questions remain around cost, infrastructure, policy, and operational impact. And for the chemical industry, the pace of fleet electrification will be a determining factor for fossil fuels demand in the future, which in turn will impact refinery operations and consequently the refinery outputs that petrochemicals use as feedstocks. So chemical market participants really need to stay abreast of fleet electrification trends that will eventually result in structural supply changes for petrochemical feedstocks. So without further ado, let's dive into it. So Joe, data available point to a slowdown in EV adoption outside of China in recent years. Namely in the EU, and even though sales did bounce back in 2025 and then policy shifts late last year moved away from a full ICE ban by 2035, so it all seems to back a slowdown in adoption forecasts for this region. And the EU had taken the regulatory lead for fleet electrification, so this could be indicative of an adoption slowdown for other regions also. So what are your views? Do you expect EV adoption in the EU will continue to pick up pace? And what about elsewhere in the world? What major adoption trend shifts would you like to highlight?
Thank you for having me here. You know, when we talk about electrification on a global basis, we really never believe this idea that one powertrain should satisfy all markets. You know, when governments and environmental agendas sort of get in the way of consumer sentiment and their direction, it's diametrically opposed right this second. Consumers weren't willing to spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for electric vehicles. And at the end of the day, each manufacturer out there, all the global players, they really have one customer to satisfy, and that's a shareholder. The consumers, like you and I, are a means to an end. You know, so when we talk about your audience here and we talk about the idea of using petroleum-based products, we do not see the death of the internal combustion engine in our lifetime. You know, there's going to be more adoption, more technology, more electrification. There is a growth path of electrification. But this idea of 100% doesn't make any sense. Every market has their own agenda. China's agenda is not a better carbon footprint. It is energy independence. They are tired of buying everyone else's oil. So they want to make their own dirty coal-fired electricity, and then sell back our technology that we've been teaching them for the last three decades back to our markets. Europe is a different play. Europe has small vehicles, and each little country tries to act like their own state. But what they're doing is death by a thousand cuts. They're basically saying, if you want to be in the city after 2 p.m., you need an EV. If you want to be in the HOV lane, you need an EV. If you want cheaper road tax, you want an EV. And consumers going, fine, you're basically hitting my wallet pennies and dollars and cents at a time. I'm going to look at electrification. Unfortunately, what they're doing is they're saying, well, that BYD is a really good looking vehicle, that Chinese brand. And Germany said, wait a second, we want you to buy Volkswagens, Mercedes, and BMWs. And consumers are going, look, I can't afford the $20,000 gap on here. Then when you bring yourself over to North America, we are a pickup truck, large SUV consumer. That is where all the bread and butter and all the profitability of the major manufacturers lie. That is not a market that is ready for electrification, especially when you're talking about $90,000, $100,000 pickup trucks. People are just not reticent to consume that. Plus, with gas stations on every corner, that is not the direction. So a lot of manufacturers went a direction going, hey, we're going to go all in, and now we are seeing them pull back, and that's what's hurting that market. So a lot of manufacturers are basically taking multi-billion dollar write-offs as we speak and retooling. So what we're going to see is we're going to see the pendulum swing back and land on hybridization. That is going to be our next frontier and saying, well, we pushed hard in the BEV space. We got the market share we wanted. Yes, there's going to be growth because the better products are coming and prices are coming down, but competition is also increasing. So as people are trying, governments are trying to push electrification, they're also trying to keep the Chinese out at the same time. And you got to fight one battle at a time here. And that's their problem right now. They're on two battle fronts that they're trying to accomplish. So we're going to fail a lot of new technology, a lot of electrification. But again, internal combustion engine death makes absolutely no sense to us.
Thanks, Joe. That makes sense. I mean, you mentioned their hybridization, and we've definitely been hearing more and more about plug-in hybrids and that sort of technology. Are these rising in importance? Is this option taking the space in the forecast mix that had previously been allocated to EVs or the ICEs?
Yeah, that's correct. So in the past, when you look at the money path, you had to say, look, it's very expensive to build ICE products and hybrids that are non-plug-in and plug-in hybrids and BEVs, battery electric vehicles. So the goal was, let's jump over plug-in hybrids. Let's get consumers to adopt hybridization through regenerative braking or 48 volt, no extra involvement with them. And then let's leap them over and say, by the way, now you have a plug. And people are going, wait a second, you're not only taking my gas I'm used to using all my life away, but you're also forcing another mode that I've never used before, plugs. And right now we're saying, well, you got to get them on a step. So now you're going to bring in plug-in hybrids to say, look, we want to get you there. We want to get you, consumer, to eventually love a plug, but we're not going to take away your security blanket of an internal combustion engine. So now you're going to see more people moving into the plug-in hybrid space over the next several years with the hope that the consumer goes, you know, this is not that bad. This plug's pretty cool. It's not a disruptor in my life. At the end of the day, it's less about the dollars and cents, and it's more about the disruption. All you need to hear is one bad story about someone forgot to plug in, or they're on the road and they couldn't find a charging station, or it froze the night before and for some reason their battery life cycle sort of dropped off. You just need one bad story. So now we're going to have a longer runway, longer path, and you can insert plug-in hybrids in there. What you're also going to insert in there is extended range. So extended range is going to be that bridging gap, right? This idea of marrying an internal combustion engine as a generator only to a plug-in hybrid vehicle. So the only propulsion that's going to come on that vehicle is power from the battery, and the engine will be a generator only. No torque, no horsepower, but it's going to give that comfort level, especially when you talk about pickup truck drivers and large SUV drivers going, okay, you're not taking my gas away, but I am getting introduced to a plug and how it may not be a disruptor in my life.
Oh, that's very interesting. So another thing I wanted to dive into is the Chinese market. You've mentioned China a few times already. It's impossible not to if we're talking EVs these days, right? So if we focus on that market for a minute, we know production and exports have grown rapidly, and the top EV seller in the world is currently a Chinese brand, if I'm not mistaken. And then on the domestic market side of things, demand has grown significantly and the country still has a huge market size potential backed by policy drive towards energy security that does include that electrification. So tell me, when will China reach peak EV adoption and what are the main challenges to achieving full passenger fleet electrification today?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we talk about China, getting to full electrification in China, that is a monster hurdle. You're talking about a market that built north of 30 million cars a year. And they're not just making BEVs. They're making ICE vehicles and sending them off to South Africa, South America, you know, third world countries to grow that because they still need that market. When you're talking about 40% penetration that we see basically in China for BEVs, and you go, well, why not 100%? That's 12 million vehicles a year. That's a substantial amount of vehicles. What China wants to do, though, is China is going to hit the major markets. So they're going to use Eastern European production as a way to get more into Western Europe. They're going to use South America as a launching pad into North America. And all the mature markets are sort of scrambling. They're trying to say, well, we want to tariff them. Well, Europe is sort of stuck because Europe has so many partnerships in China right now. They can't apply 100% tariff because it's going to be sort of a cut off your nose to spite your face move, right? They're going to hurt their partnership. And what they're doing is now is they're doing a great job in Europe. They're bringing a phenomenal vehicles. They're bringing really high-end vehicles to go against direct competition. China, what they want is they want market share first and profitability will follow. So when it comes to Europe, they're doing a great job with BYD, but we have to also pay attention to the XPengs and the Xiaomis, phenomenal vehicles that they just want market share. So when it comes to North America, their first front was, hey, let's go through Mexico. But Mexico is working with the White House going, no, we understand White House. We want to still work together because we are really important partners. We're going to tariff China. Canada, on the other hand, is saying, look, you know, Detroit 3, you're constantly taking product away from me. Canada basically is losing market share. They're losing production because the White House is basically saying, you got to build the United States if you want to really play here. So Canada is basically at a point where they have a huge market up there. They have a great consumer base. They're, you know, basically it's 1/10 the size of the United States, but they're tired of losing production. GM and Ford and Stellantis are basically exiting Canada right now. So Canada's going, look, why don't we become the people that bring the Chinese in? Because from a North America perspective, it's not if, it is when. The Chinese are coming. And they're going to come either with a partnership, or they're going to come with the idea of saving a plant that got closed, or they're going to invest billions of dollars. And people are going to forget. Back in the 70s and 80s, the Japanese said, we got great fuel economy vehicles. And we laughed in their face, go, good luck. And now they're a force to be reckoned with. The Korean manufacturers came in the 90s with a subpar product, but backed it with a 100,000-mile warranty and decided to listen to the consumer with every generation, and they win awards every single year. The Chinese are going to fill the next gap, and that's affordability. Affordability is, right now in the United States, the average car price of a vehicle is $50,000. This is unsustainable. They're going to come in, and even if they have to lower their product, even with the tariff applied, they're going to find a way in the market and sell a great product. So we think Canada is going to be their shot into North America and then eventually bleed down into the United States. It's going to take some time because of the geopolitical pains, but China is not going to give up at all on a push for global dominance. And the products they're bringing to the market are really, really solid and competitive products.
Right. All very interesting and definitely something we need to keep an eye on. Things are moving pretty fast in this space. Joe, just one final key message for our listeners. What would you highlight?
You know, I would highlight the fact that competition and pricing pressures will always drive this global market, right? There's this idea of trying to put walls around a country and have them play only in their own space. That ship has sailed. We are on a globally competitive industry. And what that means is that, yes, new technology are going to come. New ideas are going to come. You're going to see solid state. You're going to see new ways of maybe getting away from rare earth metals. You're going to see a lot of ideas out there. But the consumer always drives this market. You got to give them a product that fits their needs and is affordable. And sometimes the products right now don't fit both of those categories. And that's got to be the constant push, because at the end of the day, shareholder value is going to drive this. So when Ford takes an $18 billion, $19 billion hit and their stock price goes up, that's a good news. When GM takes a $6 billion write-off and their stock price goes up, that's good news. Big, big money losses. But as long as stock price goes up, shareholders are happy. And that's at the end of the day, the game. So yes, we're going to see peaks and valleys. We're going to see technology come. We're going to see great ideas. We're going to see countries and regions push for 100% electrification. But if the product doesn't satisfy the consumer, it's an impossible act. So from your audience perspective, ICE is still here. There is still room to grow and improve ICE. There's still technology. There's still different ways of making things more efficient and have better carbon footprint out there. But, you know, this market has a pendulum swing all the time, and peaks and valleys will always occur. But we think that we're going to see some growth in BEVs. It's here to stay. This idea of going in 45 degree angles of adoption rates makes zero sense to us, but it's here to stay, and it's got to be baked into everyone's business plan. But the idea of the engine going away anytime soon, that's a complete falsehood.
Right. Thank you so much, Joe, for joining us today, for making the time and for your expert insights.
My pleasure.
And a special thanks to our listeners as well, whom I'd like to invite to be an active participant in industry-defining discussions like this one by joining our upcoming World Chemical Forum in the Woodlands, Texas on March 25, 26. You can register now at worldchemicalforum.com. Joe will be there. And as a thank you for listening, use promo code TPOD15. So that's thank you, pod, T TPODS15 to save 15% off your registration today. We hope to see you there. Goodbye.